welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Our conversation today goes deep on decision-making in diet formulations. Our guests include Anatech Group's Dr. Aaron Gaines, along with Wayne Cast and Dr. Weasley Orlando, PIC's top nutrition specialists.
Good morning, Dr. Aaron Gaines. I'm with Anatech Group, managing partner for that company.
What do they do, Aaron?
We focus on product development and also on ingredient sales as well, feed additives.
Okay, very good. So when you say additives, I'm thinking vitamins, minerals.
More feed additives focused on improving growth performance.
Weasley Orlando, I'm Global Nutrition Director. Joined PAC 3 years ago.
Wayne Cast, and I'd help Weasley and Marcio with the nutrition at PIC. And I work mostly in North America. I go to England and Canada and Mexico.
Talk about that a minute, Wayne. Working in other countries outside the U.S., especially when it comes to nutrition.
Loadings are everything. You know, what the nutrient loadings you have on your ingredients is really what drives formulation. And so when you get to different parts of the world, you run into some ingredients you haven't seen. And so you need to make sure that they understand those ingredients. So, okay, so like Aaron last night, I got this deal. A lady in Canada says she's got this soybean meal that's 46.9% protein and 7% fat. And so that makes me a little suspicious because I don't think you can get it that much.
Both.
Because a soybean's only about 37% protein and about 18% fat. So if to get it to 47, anyway. And we have a hell of a time getting our bean meal to be with 1% fat to be 47. So you got to kind of watch because they think, yeah, loadings are everything.
How much do you rely on analysis? You know, I know when I'm talking to some of the vets, they have certain labs that they feel are more reliable. So what happens in this area?
You probably need to use the same lab over and over because different labs give you slightly different answers. And so then you'll be, if you're using one lab for one ingredient, another lab for another ingredient, you're not making a very fair comparison. So probably need to find a lab you're comfortable with and stick with it.
Yeah, and also when you have a chance to have, for example, companies that have different labs, they have a kind of interlab to compare these differences and start to standardize this difference between among those labs.
They call it a ring test where you send the same sample to several labs. But
and you do that once a year, once a month?
Depends.
That's a lab. Whenever there's a concern.
The lab does that more than the customer.
My former experience in Brazil, the company that you work with is once a year at the least. It's part of all involving external and internal labs to try to standardize this.
Aaron, how critical is this analysis to you when you're talking about additives in the forum that your company deals with?
We use a lot of lab analysis for a lot of the ingredient blends we put together, and as Wayne indicated, I mean, nutrient loadings are paramount when it comes to feed formulation, and I would agree with both Weasley and Wayne on the importance of being consistent in whatever lab you utilize. You know, I tell people, you know, get a lab you're comfortable with, and you're either going to be consistently right or consistently wrong, but we know there's a lot of lab-to-lab variation, but, you know, it's critical that we understand the nutrient values for a given ingredient so we can more accurately formulate that diet to the pig's requirements.
Probably the classic study was what Gary Cromwell there at Kentucky did was he took soybean meal from several different soy processing plants and then divided the samples up and sent them to different labs. And there was more difference between the labs on amino acid analysis than there was in the soybean meal from the different plants. So what Aaron said's true.
Yeah, I agree. And in the end, visiting different countries, different companies, we know Some companies or customers, they use tables, because one source of information is lab, is internal lab, but we also have tables. I mean, like an NRC, we have Brazilian requirement tables. We also have tables in FADEN and SPAN, CVB from Netherlands. Those are really good sources of information when you don't have actually your own information, your internal data or internal labs, right? But even with that, tables is just a table, it's a fixed information. It's good to have them one north, but we need to check. As I agree with Wayne and others say, we need to check to make sure that the ingredient that you have is pretty much close than the information that we have in tables, right? It's good to have a tables when you do not have any information.
Yeah, sometimes
that's a starting point. Yeah.
Well, right, and sometimes you have to make a decision before you're going to get in any analysis. The guy says, hey, I can get this for this price. Is that a good deal? Well, you got to use the table, and then you'll figure out later if you were right or not.
Yeah, and of course, for us that work, we work supporting customer in different countries. If you're talking about prosumate analysis, amino acids or calcium, phosphorus, it's really easy because we have information from labs. But in terms of energy, this is really spread. This is really different because, for example, if I compare a diet here, the similar diet in North America, and I send this diet for a colleague in Europe to formulate in their loading values, they have a kind of sometimes 100 kcal difference in NE and net energy. That represents a kind of 2% of fat in the diet, equivalent at 2%. And that is a really, really huge money involved. So it's only in loading values. I'm not saying that the diet is different. I'm just saying that the similar diet, when you formulate with two different loading values, we could find 100 kcal difference.
And so what Weasley's is saying is that they take the same pounds of corn, soy, and all that, and plug it in here, and plug it in there. It's just the same pounds, and there's 100 kcal difference in NE. Yeah. So that's
I compare the fat in a system for in Spain, for example, the similar number, let's say 2,300 kcal of NE there, it's similar to 2,400 NE on NE based here in North America in NRC basis, only by loading values.
And you would think everybody would have this in the United States, let's just do it in the United States, everybody would use the same energy for corn, but they don't. And corn can be different too, how fine you grind it and what the moisture level is. The point is that energy, there you can't send it to lab and get energy. Energy is a calculation, or you can do it through feeding studies. Aaron can talk about that.
Yeah. How critical is reliability in your supplier? I'm thinking of some of the sourcing we've done from China, from some other countries in the past, which we found out later were not what we'd hoped they were. But today, have we discovered all that? Are there still concerns about reliability of suppliers when we talk about not only our major components, but also our key minor components?
As it relates to suppliers, one of the things that we look at as nutritionists is, you know, just consistency of supply in terms of those nutrient values. And, you know, if you've got a supplier that's got high variation in their product, you know, we're going to account for that variation and that product's going to be discounted. So the more consistency you have with a supplier, certainly that it's going to be more predictive of your outcome as it relates to feeding the pig. And as a nutritionist, we're going to put more value on that consistency. So when you think about nutrient loadings, you know, one of the steps that we typically take is we account for what the average value is for nutrient, but we also look at the variation around that average and account for that variation when we plug in a nutrient value for a particular ingredient. So consistency is key when it comes to supplier.
Yeah, one concern that's been added to purchases now that I probably didn't think about 10 years ago is worry about disease processes. You know, we didn't think much about bringing PED in from China or anywhere. We just didn't think about that. And so that's sure on people think about it now, whether that's where it came from or not, I don't know, but people sure think more about that now.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of efforts now, to Wayne's point, on different mitigation strategies to deal with foreign animal disease if you do have ingredient or feed contamination. I know this, you know, past spring here at Midwest Animal Sciences meeting, there was a lot of research being done with different technologies to mitigate different foreign animal diseases, which, you know, with the outbreak of PD virus in 2014, it certainly has become top of mind for a lot of production systems because of the economic losses, you know, associated with disease, and particularly with a foreign animal disease. You know, God forbid we have something like that hit the U.S. and it interrupts trade. You know, certainly needs to be a continued effort to understand how we can mitigate those challenges and not, you know, risk our food supply.
We wouldn't have thought about it 10 years ago. Agreed. We think about it now. Is that because it didn't happen 10 years ago, or is it because our discovery methods are improved in tracing back sourcing of things like that?
But when we got Serco, I don't know if anybody figured out where Serco came from, and so feed or ingredients didn't get pointed at very much there, but they certainly got pointed at when we got PED. So, and I guess those seem to be, well, and before that, the big one was a pseudorabies, and I don't think that feed stuff's got blamed for that much either. So it's probably more of a recent phenomenon than a historic one.
I think the process to make the right supplier start much early. I mean, visit the supplier, see the condition. I remember, I mean, when you try, my former company tried to figure out new places to have a new suppliers, everything works very well in papers. They have a good market prospected in papers and products. But when you visit and see the technology and also the processing, sometimes say, hey, it's really, really bad, and put it as a risk. I remember, and once we were trying to buy some amino acids from one company, and we never seen this company. I mean, it's a new company. We tracked nine different bats, and seven from nine was positive from nitrofurans. Okay, and that is really, and something that people say, hey, I didn't know that. People don't know because they do not analyze. But as soon as is it as an important point for us, we track and you just find 7 of 10 of 9 bats.
That's interesting that that's become a part of your responsibility.
Yeah, as a nutritionist, it's a part of our job, make sure that we have the right supplier as well.
Or deal with the supplier. You know, you have a choice. So somebody phones, oh, I got this Chinese phytase and it's got the same organism as this. Well, yeah, you can buy that stuff, but you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do for quality control to make sure it works. Or you can work with a company, a reputable company, somebody that knows it's established.
And moving for one, much more real, for example, soybean rolls, right? Soybean rolls is an ingredient available. And we ask ourselves, hey, how about a salmonella contamination? And people say, I don't think it is a problem. But the question is, have you guys tracked? Have you guys tried to figure out? No. I say, yeah. That is not a problem for sure because you never track. But if you track, probably I can warranty that you have maybe almost 100% positive for salmonella. Because the process that they have, I mean, not probably pelleting when they have a pellet because they reduce the contamination. But, I mean, the raw one with no pellet, it's 100% contaminated.
Cost drivers of a diet. Corn, beans, yes, outside the U.S. What are cost drivers for our diet today?
I mean, I would say, you know, instead of just pointing out specific ingredients, I mean, the big cost drivers as it relates to nutrients in the diet are going to be energy and amino acids. They're the two most expensive nutrients in the diet. And so as a nutritionist, it's important that you understand, you know, the energy and amino acid requirements of the pig so you can determine really the economic optimum for diet formulation. And then, as you know, Wayne indicated, what's also critical is understanding the nutrient loadings for ingredients specific to energy and amino acids.
And notice that Aaron said optimal economic, because that, and that may not be maximum performance. That, you know, there's one level to get them to grow as fast and efficient as you can, but that may be not the level that makes the farmer the most money. So, and understanding what maximum is, and then as you reduce a nutrient, what the effect on performance is. That's the trick. Any damn fool can put in plenty. The trick is putting in just enough, you know.
Yeah, I used to say when I have training, I'd say, trainees in my company, I would say in the formulation, I'd say, I can train my mom to do formulation. And she, as soon as she has this cues in the computer, she can formulate that diet. It's really simple. Mm-hmm. But the point is, you need to know about nutrition to do the right diet. And combining this concept, I would say most of the nutritionists, they know very well about the biological response. But understand about the economical response, this is the trick. And actually, it's not a, and most of the nutritionists, they formulate, and the software formulate for the least cost, right? They put it there, that, and the input, you have this the constraints in the diet, and then you have the least cost for the diet. But it's much more than this. And talking and turning back to the Aaron's point, I agree, it's nutrient cost. I mean, consider that energy is the most expensive one, amino acids is the second one, phosphorus the 31. I used to say, if you combine those three to check in terms of biological response and also cost, you have at least 95 or more chance to be right with those three. I'm not saying that the other point is not important, but I think in terms of variation, this those three represent more than 95% of the response, the biological response.
What's been the biggest driver for change in how you do your jobs in the last decade? What's changed since 2008, 2010 to today that's caused you to think of your jobs differently?
I would probably say go back to 2007 for myself when we saw the boom in the ethanol industry, and we saw corn prices go to $7 and forced a lot of us to figure out how we get corn out of the diet and replace it with other ingredients. And so we really have seen a big shift as it relates to how we feed pigs, moving from a corn soy diet formulation to diets that are a lot higher fiber ingredients. Different corn co-products are used very heavily today than they were, you know, 10 years ago, and that's, you know, an effort to manage overall feed cost. So I would say that would be one of the big things that have changed, you know, for myself and others as it relates to diet formulation in the last decade.
Yeah, I think too. We never had a byproduct save as much money as distillers did there for a period of time, because they're going to make the ethanol no matter what, and so they had to get rid of that. And so it was, never had an ingredient in my career that offered as much savings as they did at that time. And it's gone full circle now. I did some dyes last night, Aaron, and it didn't hardly want any distillers because they're too damned high. And then, yeah, so then I think another big thing, maybe not in the last 10, but maybe in the last 20, is crystalline amino acid use. You know, we used to just know, okay, you could replace 100 pounds of 44 bean meal with 3 pounds of lysine and 97 pounds of corn. But now we're using 6 and 9 and 12 pounds of crystalline lysine plus threonine plus tryptophan plus methionine, these other crystalline amino acids. And
yeah, that's a good point. When I finished my PhD, I worked with protein reduction. And I remember, because when I was defending my PhD thesis, they asking, hey, you have one question for the professor. Say, why I work with 6 amino acids, crystalline amino acids, since today we just have lysine and methionine.
Right.
In that day.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, probably in 6 months we have threonine available as well.
Yeah.
And so I say, oh, okay. But we have more threonine. we do science. We produce science, and the technology will be evolved. Right now, Wayne, we can use at least 5, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not isoleucine, but we can use
valine.
Yeah. We have this technology in 15 years. I mean, I remember when I started to work the next month, in 6 months, I was using threonine. When I left the company, my company used to work with the 5 amino acids. And that is a really good improvement in terms of cost and also production. So, or moving pieces on another part about phosphorus, for example, I remember 15 years ago when I started, we don't have phytase. The question is phytase or is enzyme something that we need to explore? Right now, I'd say if I have 100 customers visiting, I don't think I will find one that do not work with phytase,
right?
Because if you're thinking about ROI, return over investment, the ROI for one phytase is a kind of, let's say, more than 50, more than 5. The last time that I calculated, probably you guys have a new number, but it's 7 to 1. $1, you have a $7 saving, okay? And it's a technology that works pretty well.
Phytase is a big change. Distillers.
We talked about the most efficient diet. As far as productivity, we've talked about the most economical diet, different ways to evaluate that. With the onset of distillers, and probably before that, now we had a product quality issue, a meat quality issue that was impacted. Was that really a part of the conversation before distillers?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so in meat quality, I don't like that term, so I'm going to give you hell about that,
okay.
Is that because that's pretty broad. It's pretty darn broad. That's like a pretty girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, different things. So, but
I know one when I see one, Wayne.
Yeah, exactly. I would say we're talking about fat iodine value and fat firmness, you know? The pig takes on the characteristics of the fat that he's fed. By definition, an oil is a liquid at room temperature, and a fat is a solid. And so, and there's more saturated fats, firmer fats in a solid than there are in the liquids. And so when we started feeding distillers and they had 10 and 11% corn oil in there, our pigs, the fat got softer. And so if Pierce Lyons would have been in charge of the pork industry, he would have sold it as being healthier because it had less saturated fat and all. It would have been a positive, you know. But the packer probably aren't quite as open-minded as Pierce was, and so they were concerned about this softness. And it probably does reduce shelf life some too. The softer a fat, the less saturated fat, the shelf life isn't as good. So in that way, yeah, our pigs probably got some softer. But Seaboard was, Premium Standard Farms was, before we ever had distillers, they had iodine value targets on their pigs, on the fat of their pigs. Because there's lots of way I can make a pig soft and not feed any distillers, or I can still feed some distillers and have a hard pig. There's a lot of things that, it's all the fat in all the ingredients that you're using that sums up to make your final product.
It may be something new that we've learned, that as the customer, as the consumer has become more determinant about the factors that they want to see or want to taste or want to experience when they eat the product, maybe that has changed our perspective on, well, how do we adjust it in order to meet those expectations?
It won't taste any different.
Yeah, and actually, meat quality and nutrition is points really related, but we do not have a single answer. I mean, in places like South America, for example, when they're talking about meat quality, they are talking much more about lean than fat quality, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're talking with Wayne about lean here, lean is probably not the goal here, right? So meat quality is really a broad
yeah.
term. I mean, it's not a single one. But for sure, nutritionists, when they formulate, they should consider this as a point. I mean, everything that you put in a diet, maybe more in terms of fat, affected directly in terms of meat quality or meat experience or whatever, okay? So, or even with you formulated diet with the most economical one, not necessarily have the lean animal or the best animals in terms of meat quality or or Caracasiudo,
yeah.
Stuff like
so,
that.
So, like, yeah, PIC's got a tenderness measurement in their index now, and they got a have had a pH index in for years, and then in some lines they have a marbling part of their index.
Yeah, I would say, you know, just kind of build off of what Wayne indicated earlier, I would say that as nutritionists started to use more and more corn co-products, that became more of a reality for more of the industry as it relates to fat quality and hitting an iodine value specification. And so the good news is, just through research, you know, we've been able to figure out how to feed some of these corn co-products to mitigate some of the negative impact on iodine value, whether that's like a step-down program. And then there's some technologies like CLA and lipinate that you can feed to offset some of the negatives that come with softer fat when you feed dry distillers grains or other corn co-products that are contained in corn oil or that softer unsaturated oil. So I would say I think it's become more top of mind for a nutritionist than it was, you know, 10 years ago, because just increased use of corn co-products across the entire industry.
So feeding in difficult times versus good times. What are key components that you want to really examine when I've got a really small or non-existent margin or negative margin? When it's difficult, what is it that I want to watch most closely?
I mean, the first thing that you need to really be aware of is knowing the pig's requirement for energy, amino acid, and phosphorus. You know, if you're overfeeding already, there's a lot of opportunity there, particularly in difficult times, to, you know, get more accurate in terms of your feed formulation by knowing the pig's requirement. And of course, when you get in tough times, you know, nutritionists are very inclined to go after feed additives in terms of understanding their value, and tend to be more aggressive on, you know, seeking out ingredients that help lower diet cost. But, you know, when times get tough, I mean, you really got to understand the animal's requirement and make sure you're optimizing as close as you can to meeting that animal's requirement accurately, and then, you know, go after maybe some other opportunities in your overall feeding program, whether that's a new ingredient or a lower cost ingredient, or, you know, again, critiquing some of the feed additives that you might be using in your diets.
Yeah. So typically when times are tough, pigs are cheap, right? It can be that pigs are cheap or feed's really high, but I think you got to understand the value of the gain has changed. And so if you have additives that drive gain but not feed efficiency, or don't drive them in the equal amount, then those, if that gain's less valuable to you, those should get the most scrutiny. And we do get a little, not anybody on this call would happen to, but I've heard stories about people getting complacent when times are good, and we probably put some things in that we shouldn't, and then when times get tough, then we take some things out that we shouldn't. So I think we look at the value of the gain and look at the value of products that increase gain, and that number can change. The question stays the same every year. It's just the answers become different. Yeah.
So I think the first point is understandable, the market. We need to keep focus in the market. What happened in terms of park price and the value gain, as Wayne mentioned before? As soon as we know that, as a nutritionist, we need to understand that we work 3, 4, 5 months before this market. I mean, if you have information for today, the nutritionist unfortunately cannot do anything, or probably have a 50% chance to be right or wrong, right? Because you formulate that for today. First point, understand about your future price. Second, and see the value for technologies like feed additives or energy. I will start with the energy, then amino acids, then phosphorus, and feed additives are available in some, I would say, when you have a good prices, or even, for example, some products. We are talking one of those days about rectopamine. Okay, they ask me which is the best protocol for rectopamine. I would say, you know, depends. If I'm gonna export in carcass, is one valve. If I'm trim the carcass is another value. If I'm just selling animals, probably the least value, right? So it's different. It's the same technology, but it's different approaches. And of course, the good nutritionist is attentive about that. They have to make sure the goals that a company has. Okay.
I really appreciate your comment. We've related to being aware of things that one would not think about being in the nutritionist blockhouse, an area where you would typically pay responsibility to. Now, so take me a step further when I think about a health program. How, knowing what that animal's exposed to pharmaceutically, how does that affect, or does it affect what you guys do? Is it something that you pay attention to?
Yeah, let's say about not only in terms of growth promoters or medicines, let's say our energy requirement or lysine requirement, amino acid requirement, everything works very well in our software and even in our models. But if you have constraints in the farms, I mean, shorting the space, or they have feeders, or problems in ventilation, the response that I predicted in my model is not totally true. Then the nutritionist need to be aware about that and maybe consider this as a risk. I mean, okay, let's run in with the perfect model that PAC designed, so, and that's it. No, if you have more constraints, you have more chance to have trouble even formulating with the requirement.
So you might talk with a tech person. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily, where we talked about, you almost need to be on site at the sources at some point. At this end, you just need to know a lot more about the information that you're providing that nutritional information for.
Yeah, I would say there needs to be a really close relationship between the nutritionist and the health team. And contrary to popular belief, a nutritionist and a veterinarian can get along.
So I've been to meetings where I would really question that, Aaron, but I understand what you're saying.
Understood. But it is critical because we're understanding more and more about the, you know, nutrition and health interactions and how to feed, you know, health challenge pigs differently than what we've done in the past. So understanding a particular flow of pigs or a barn of pigs and, you know, our nutrition approaches should be different on how we feed those animals. But, you know, it comes down to communication. And, you know, the veterinarians are out in the barns a lot more than nutritionists are. And so, you know, they're the eyes and ears on the ground as well as a lot of the field staff. So you really got to have communication back to the nutritionist. And the nutritionist needs to spend some time in the barn as well. But it's going to take a team approach to really understand the health profile of a system and, you know, make adjustments to feed formulation. But there are opportunities given, you know, current knowledge and some of the newer research on how to feed sick pigs.
Like what?
So, you know, an example would be, you know, health challenge pigs, we're finding that the amino acid requirements of those pigs are different than pigs that are not health challenged. So if you've got, you know, a flow of pigs that's got a lot of flu or PRRS in them, you know, you may consider feeding those pigs differently in terms of maybe a higher amino acid requirement. Some work at Iowa State has at least shown that.
Not higher lysine levels, but increasing your ratios of your others. That's what you're saying, Aaron?
No, higher lysine levels if they're sick. Specific to a PRRS challenge is what the Iowa State work has shown. So that's something that, you know, is a little bit different than the way we thought in the past, because typically the paradigm has been if a pig's sick, they're not growing, they just really need enough amino acids to mount the immune response. But what we're finding is a percentage of the pig's diet, the lysine level needs to be increased. So that would be an example where you could possibly adjust, you know, feed formulation. Likewise, there may be ingredients. There's some work out of the University of Illinois that shows that there's some benefits of having soybean meal in the diet when there's a PRRS challenge. So, and a lot of that work goes back to some of Tim Staley's work with isoflavones and having potential benefits for, you know, pigs that are infected with PRRS. So it's an interesting area and certainly a lot of complexity, but creates opportunity on how we feed pigs, because you look at where our pigs are raised geographically, we're pretty concentrated. A lot of pigs in the Midwest, and you know, endemic and epidemic disease is something we deal with every day. And so I think we do have to change our paradigms on how we feed pigs, because back to Weasley's point, you know, we're not feeding pigs day in, day out that are always healthy. There's a lot of health challenges out here.
We talked about what happens when times are good and bad. What happens when I either need to speed up or slow down a flow? I've got 10% too many hogs. I'd really like to speed this up. When the tech guy comes back or the customer calls and says, here's my situation, what are my options? What do you think of?
Yeah, I will share one experience that I had a couple of years ago. Actually, the board of director of the company that I used to work in called me and say, hey, we need to increase to speed up these animals because you need to sell more for one specific market. So, and I remember they said, okay, you guys have a couple of hours to answer me how many kilos we can improve in a short period of time, right? So, of course, as a nutritionist, we can read a book and say, we do not have 1,000 points. We can discuss about 1,000 points. That is energy, let's say bractopamine strategy, or let's say some feed additives, right? So, but in the end, this decision is basically an economical standpoint. They are not only asking about this. So what you can do by nutrition point at that time, forget about least cost. Let's think about profitability. If somebody asking about this, they are trying to see more value to sell that pounds, right? So what in that time was clear for me one thing. We formulate diets with the strategy that we have, and we increase a kind of $2 million per month in terms of cost, okay? And of course, the first answer from the border when they have the feedback, say, no, yeah, we will not do that. Say, yeah, we can't. But listen, if you increase 5 pounds, that is 5 pounds, the planet is increased 5 pounds, that 5 pounds, I don't need to buy in the market, and the market is really warm, I mean, very good prices. So if I increase 5 pounds in my own animals, I do not need to buy in the market. So, and I avoid 4 million. In the end of the day, I increase 2 million in my cost, but I avoid to buy 4 million. I save 2 million. In the end, I say, yeah, that's true. This is a good point. It's not only cost. It's profitability in the end. If you have more pounds to sell and the market is good, or you have opportunity to sell more, you can do that. Even forget about least cost when you have a good market, right? Least cost is just one, it works very well in a computer. You can, of course, all nutritionists have computer and softwares to work with the least cost in formulation. But we need to move in more than this and work about best profitability, consider revenue as well, not only cost.
Yeah, I'd say an important aspect, you know, when a production system is either long in space or short, is whether they're hitting, you know, their profit optimum for target market weight. And so this is going to have a big impact on whether you make changes in diet formulation and or you make changes in your space acquisition needs. So, for example, you know, if pigs are being marketed below a profit optimum for a target market weight, a production system is going to have to evaluate whether it's more cost effective to change the diet, or is it more cost effective to add more finishing space.
And which is? You put it on a spreadsheet.
Yep.
And the other thing is that, you know, June, July, and August in the United States, pigs are usually the highest priced. Pig sows that are bred in the hottest months and farrowed in the coldest months usually make you the most money. Okay, so that's the highest price. And if you're going to, and you don't wait till May, if you want them bigger in June, July, and August, you don't wait till May to do your interventions. Or you can, and human nature is that we do, but you really need to be thinking about this and making changes in March. And some guys go back and they enhance their nursery program and then you would change your first grower diet, whatever intervention you have for more gain, and then you change your next, a month later or 3 weeks later, you change your next one. And by the time you're changing your last diet, you're pretty close to starting taking those interventions out of your first diet, where those interventions be copper or more energy or increasing your tryptophan ratio or scisis or whatever.
I think typically when we get into a situation where we're short on space in the summer months, the first lever we're going to pull a lot of times from a diet standpoint is to add more supplemental fat. But going back to understanding, you know, the pig's requirement, a question becomes, within your production system, do your pigs respond to gain when you increase dietary energy density? And so, and that depends on the production system. I've had experiences with systems where you add supplemental fat, you get responses in average daily gain and feed conversion to increase fat levels. And then I've worked with a system where as you add increased fat, no response to average daily gain, only feed conversion, which would be more of the classical response to increase in energy level in the pig, because the pig typically eats to his energy requirement unless there's some type of restriction on that animal, where if they can't eat to their energy requirement, they're restricted by some stressor like heat stress, for example, or feeder space, then you typically see a response to average daily gain when you increase supplemental fat. So again, very important to understand the energy response curve of the pigs you're feeding. So when you get into a situation where you're short on space, is adding supplemental fat an option that's going to give you a return on that investment?
Because fat will seldom, if ever, pay for itself with feed efficiency alone. It just doesn't. Hardly ever will. And so you got to get that gain response, and understanding what Aaron's pointing out, the magnitude, because some people, an old rule of thumb, for every 1% fat you add, you get 1% on gain and 2% on feed efficiency. And Paul Klein's refined that in their system, it's like 0.8 and 1.8. So, but there's people, smart guys, that know and that don't feel they get a gain response. And so then, yeah, it's not cost effective.
And one point that we need to turn back is talking about what it means to actually fixed time and fixed weight. Because, you know, visiting customers in different parts of the world, some when you have these questions, I would say it's really hard sometimes, because people understand as soon as they have the information about the weight that they predicted, they think that it's fixed weight. But actually, in the end, they are not fixed weight. They are fixed time. Most of our system, production system, works with a fixed time. So, but there is still thinking that it's fixed weight, right? So define this and make sure that you understand your system. If you don't have, like, and there's more points to be taken in this discussion. For example, if you have just one feed mill, you are working 100% of the capacity, right? If you do something to slow down, where is the place that you produce feed for this system? Or if you do not have more barns, what do you do? Building a barn in 1 month, 2 months? No. In the end, it's important to define and understand the system. If you are restricted in space or if you are not restricted in space. And in space means even feed mill, right?
Feed mill can't hardly make all the feed you're making. You surely can't, even if it looks like it saves you money per ton, you can't do anything that would make your feed efficiency worse, because then you've got pigs that aren't fed.
I had one customer experience that they took out the ractopamine in the system, right? And they predict a kind of, let's say, 5% worse in feed conversion. But the question is, okay, we cannot do this right now. Because we do not have feed mill. The closest feed mill from us here is a kind of 300 kilometers. So they cannot bring diets. I mean, it's a really, to do economically, you have to understand about the system and constraints in the system.
Do you have a winter diet and a summer diet? Or do you have six-step diets that take you through the seasons? Probably depends on the latitude of the customer as well, the seasonality of their operation. But how often do you look at that, knowing that the temperature is changing and so their requirements are changing?
Probably doesn't get changed much on temperature alone. Probably, I would say, it gets changed more on commodity prices changing probably is a bigger driver of how formulas look than what the thermometer says. I mean, the thermometer and the fact that June, July, and August are our highest price, but it's probably more the price than the thermometer.
I'd go back to Weasley's comment. For systems to understand whether they're in a fixed weight or fixed time situation, and so kind of define those a little bit. You know, a fixed time scenario is when there's a static amount of space available in the system to achieve that profit optimum weight specification for your packer, your customer. And in that situation, the value of gain is based on the value of an incremental pound produced. So if the carcass price is worth $80 a hundredweight, then each carcass pound produced is worth 80 cents a pound, versus a fixed weight scenario is more dynamic, and it's based on the amount of space available in the system to achieve that profit optimum. In this scenario, you know, the value of the gain is really based on the incremental space cost to achieve a target weight. So an example here is the space cost is 12 cents a day, and it takes one additional day to achieve a target weight. The value of that gain is 12 cents a pig. That's the thing that, you know, a lot of systems really need to understand is, you know, they may consider themselves a fixed weight system, but you get in the summer months and you're not hitting that profit optimum weight, you need to realize that you are in a fixed time scenario. So you got to start making some decisions on whether you change the diet or whether your business development team can go get more finishing space to hit that optimum weight target.
Or you might double stock them longer, or you might, you know, there's some things, things we can do.
And actually, turn for the answer, Wayne point, I think, of course, if you think just in terms of biological response, we can talk about fiber, fat, utilization by summer, but in the end, the most important is talking about economic decision based in value of pigs and value of porks during the summer. There's countries, some countries, last night, for example, I have a dinner with Colombia. In Colombia, you have almost 12 months in the year with a good price. I mean, in the end, it's not summer or winter, it's value of pork, right? Yeah. And so look at about what happened in China. 3 years ago, I remember my first time there, I compared, doesn't matter the exchange, the breaking even to our requirements, I mean, proposed comparing our requirement, is a kind of 10 RMBs, right? And the pork price there is a kind of 21 RMBs. Mm. Last year, talking with the same customer, the break even is about 10, and the cost and the pork price, 14 RMBs. Look at this year, they have about 10, 11. Breaking even, about 10, 11. So in the end, when I talk with this similar customer, I told, you know, you guys do not lose money 2 years ago or three or last year, but you lose opportunity to sell more 2 years ago and last year. So I agree with Wayne. I think it's more than talking about strategies to summer or winter. Is know about your system, know about the market, and formulate in accordance with the strategy that you have in your company. Target your let's say your strategies in nutrition, energy, feed additives in accordance with the pork value.
Aaron referenced step diets related to ethanol impact on corn availability, some things that we could do to maximize the product quality with these inputs. Talk to me a second about dosing of other inputs. I mean, we tend to think of there being a nice slow bell curve when we incorporate some of the additives to our diets. But is that how that works, or do we tend to, you know, I know this works best from 21 days to 6 weeks, and so I'm really going to hit them with this, and then that goes away, and I bring something else in. Is that what does today's nutritional profile look like related to the life of the hog?
Well, I would say that there are certain technologies that are specific for a particular phase of production, and probably the one that comes to mind is, you know, ractopamine. That ractopamine response is very transient, and so you know, there's an optimum duration of feeding for ractopamine in that late finishing pig where, you know, if you overfeed it, you can decrease the overall value proposition. Likewise, if you underfeed it, you can also not maximize the economics of that product. So there's certain, that's a good example of product that needs to be fed for a specific time period.
I think one point in terms of feed additive is figure out you have condition to evaluate in your systems, because, you know, there's a 1,000 products today available in the market. It's hard to know which one works and if it works with your situation, because, you know, there is a good, of course, if you're talking about the ractopamine or stuff like that, there is a bunch of trials, and I don't think we need to repeat this and create information that already exists. But for new products, I think, and this is a good point of discussion, is make sure your system, you have the right condition to evaluate the product, to see the real value in your systems. I mean, based on my experience, sometimes, let's say, I don't know, Aaron have a huge experience on this, Wayne as well, but my stats is a kind of each 10 products that people offer for me, I would say, or 100, let's say less than 5 works, or it's just a small part that works. So, but sometimes you found opportunities in products that is good, and sometimes much better than the guy, actually, the supplier, because they just wrote really broad information. But as soon as you evaluate in your system, doing the right way, using research facility, you can identify better the best opportunity, right?
So questions for each other. Things that we've talked about today, either really relevant or really irrelevant, or you've just got a question on why they think what they think.
So, Aaron, when you add space, you know, that for pigs grow slower in the summertime, we're going to need more space. We want to get them bigger because they're more valuable. But don't you, when you could find space, wasn't it a lot of times not very good space because it was someplace? The reason there weren't pigs in there was that nobody else wanted to put pigs in there. And how did you figure the cost of that? Because they weren't going to perform at the same level as if they were in your barns.
Yeah, that's a fair question. So in general, when you look at kind of historical ingredient pricing, when you get into a situation where you're not achieving, you know, your target market weight, it's usually cheaper to add finishing space if it's available. You know, there would be exceptions to that, particularly if, you know, your fat to corn pricing, you know, got below 360% of corn. But, you know, you do get in the situation where if you go out and try to find that space and it's available, typically the industry, you know, is pretty tight on space. And so if that space is available, to Wayne's point, it's usually not the highest quality space. And typically what, you know, you need to do in those situations is, you know, discount that space. Usually you're not going to take a very long position on a contract with that space. It may be on a turn-by-turn basis, and you would discount that to account for the quality of that space. So that's typically how I think most would handle that situation, Wayne.
And then the other part of it is, too, usually, my experience, you guys have been successful doing that, and I think, and that's great, but a lot of people haven't been because they end up having to deal with a feed mill they haven't dealt with before, and the reason it's empty is either the management's not good, or geographically it's challenged as far as corn price. It's tough. It's a tough deal, and so that's why things like doing anything we can, double stocking or better ventilation and cooling, to increase average daily gain, or even, you know, everybody talks about square footage, you know, how many square foot. I think a lot of times our linear inches of feeder is restricting our pig's ability to grow. I mean, you talked earlier about, in the book says the pig should eat more to meet his energy needs. Well, if he has the opportunity, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wayne, I think you bring up a good point in terms of, you know, how do you quantify the value of that space, you know, particularly, you know, the feed mill side. To your point on that is, you know, if you have to go to a mill, you know, and you don't have experience with that mill, you know, they may or may not have pelleting. If you're pelleting diet, so you got to account for the fact that you may have to move from a pelleted diet to a meal diet, quality of the ingredients, the grind size that they're using. All that's got to be accounted for, and also just your overhead cost of adding another mill to your system's portfolio, because somebody's got to manage that relationship and, you know, collect QC data from that feed mill and its extra diets. So it's not as simple as just going out and looking at the space and discounting it based on the quality of the space. There's other factors to consider in terms of how you look at that equation. And I think, Wesley, you mentioned it earlier, is the fact that, you know, you really need to be using economic tools to drive these decisions. It's not as simple as pressing a button and formulating a diet when it comes to nutrition.
Yeah. In terms of my visiting different countries in the last 3 years, unfortunately, but good, because we can help, right?
Right.
This is the reason that we prepare the first chapter in the nutrition, the last nutrition manual in the PAC. We put a kind of very didactic chapter explaining people how they calculate that.
Yeah.
Because my first experience here with a customer was, I'm trying to show about the new requirements in PAC, and they said, you know, I cannot do that. Say, why? Because actually I will put extra cost in my diet, and this is cost more per kilogram of gain. And I say, yes, that's true, and I cannot do that. I have my budget. I say, okay, but if you produce more, you have more value. And they say, yeah, you know, but you have to help me to convince my boss. And I said, wow. And so that means that when I turn back, I say, yeah, we need to do something as a first chapter to make sure the nutrition is, my experience, since I'm from Brazil, I would say it's not true here in the States. People works very good in terms of economical decision. But let's say abroad, they are more nutritionist as a biological. I'm not saying that is a bad one. I mean, it's good, but they need to move in. Start to thinking more and more about this. I mean, what is the value? It's not only cost, it's value, okay? It's profitability. So there's a really good tools available today in the PAC.
The example Weasley just gave, the pigs were printing money. They were making a lot of money. So the bigger you could get them, the more money you would make. All right, so another example of that is, let's say, Aaron owned a packing plant, and he could only kill his own pigs. He couldn't go buy other pigs. Mm-hmm. And let's say the packing plant's making 10 cents a pound on every pound of carcass that goes out there. So Aaron's profitability picture, or what he could afford to pay for growth additive, would be higher, because they're making another 10 cents a pound here.
Other than product, meaning acids, some of the things that you use to make your diet recommendations, are there any new tools that, you know, I mean, yeah, we've got a computer, we've changed the spreadsheet, there's an app for that. But are there tools that you are now incorporating into, or you're looking forward to be able to incorporate into your nutrition decisions?
Yeah, let's say what we have done in PAC. For example, 3 years ago, we released a meta-analysis, result in a meta-analysis in lysine, okay? Based on our 2080 trials, almost 50,000 animals, really strong equations. So, we put it in a nutrition guideline. It's just a table, okay? And everybody say, okay, I see this table, I'm formulated exactly in your table, say A. That is just biological and a table. Visit our economic tools. So, and one guy in one presentation that I was doing in Canada asked me, are you saying that your animals have different requirements in different countries? My answer is no. The requirement, the biological requirement by definition, is the same. But the economical response is not the same. And I turn back and say, hey, but how can I do that? How can I calculate that? And PAC developed these tools and economicals to make it an economical decision, to help our customer get the economical decision, not only if they wanted to buy biological one, it's available. It's in the same tool. But we also have the most economical requirements in tools. For example, energy. Last year, we developed with, in cooperation with Kansas State University, a modeling and to find actually the best, or try to figure out which is the best energy level for peak production. I mean, when to finish production. So growing to finish production. So that is a strong tool. I mean, it's really good tool. There's a model behind. It's totally open, designed with the PAC pigs. And we can actually predict the performance, and we can find the best energy in accordance with your cost. I mean, if I'm in Iowa, I have one value. If I'm in North Carolina, I have another value, right? The same, similar for the country, different countries. You agree, Wayne?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah, and it's more dynamic than a guy thinks, because it's changed whether you should be feeding. In the last year, it's changed a couple times whether you should be feeding at the biological requirement or something lesser. So, yeah, it's pretty dynamic.
Yeah, it's a kind of, you know, usually companies work with the budget. They say, hey, they need, because they have to, mainly integrated companies, they need to predict the cost to sell. They are building contracts for 1 year ahead, right? They need to predict the cost. So, but anyway, the nutritionists need to be aware about what happened in the market. For example, if you see the forecast for soybean meal, for example, for the next 6 months, you can anticipate your contracts with amino acids. You can see the value for energy, okay? People think that a soybean, only soybean actually is the trick to find the best economic decision in amino acids. Not only soybean, but there is much more value probably in the difference between, or the spread between corn and soybean than really only the soybean cost.
What about your toolbox, Aaron? Anything new in there? Anything you wish was in there?
I would say, you know, Weasley's done a good job covering some of the nutrient requirement data and economic models that PIC's put together. And I know other feed companies and universities have done similar things. I think another tool that, you know, I certainly put value on, go back to nutrient loadings, is really lab management systems on how do you manage all this data from your ingredient analysis and then integrating that with your formulation system. And there's been some formulation companies that are starting to integrate, you know, commercial lab data into formulation. So the days of hand, you know, taking an Excel spreadsheet and, you know, putting all your analysis in a spreadsheet, determine what the average is, standard deviation. Now all that can be built into your formulation program, where it's a download from a lab right into your formulation system. And then, you know, you have to do some programming to account for some of the variation, but that becomes very useful to manage all that data as a part of your quality control program, to make sure you're using updated nutrient loadings for the ingredients that you're using. So that's a tool I get pretty excited about, because, you know, Wayne said it earlier, nutrient loadings are everything, and obviously knowing the pig's requirement. But that's something that I think you'll see more and more people look at in terms of adoption as a key tool.
And we know that different ingredients, for example, soybean meal, there is a variation in crude protein and amino acids. But if you are working with animal byproduct, for example, in some places people work with fatter meal, bonamide meal, this variation is much higher. And what do nutritionists really do in this situation? They work on average, and they have a kind of a least one standard deviation, two standard deviation, depends on how much you are a challenge the nutritionist or you challenge yourself. So this is really a good point for moving forward in terms of precision feeding. We know that, for example, today there is technology available like NIR, for example, that you can get really quick response, I mean, quick answer. So there's a couple softwares today and some new improvement in softwares that can integrate actually this information with your software, formulation software, and also with the feed meal to a kind of adequate the diet in accordance with the ingredients that it. Of course, this is new. I mean, not too new. I mean, a couple years ago. But it's something that they are starting. It becomes more, I would say, more available today. I think this is a good point to be taken in the future. Be more precise in terms of, not in formulation, because if you ask Wayne that, 40 years formulating diets, you're supposed to do really exactly in your software, right, Wayne? Mm-hmm. But the point is, what the feed mill is doing today with your diets, right? This is the point. I mean, and after the feed mill, what happened with your diet as well? Because they think that they're doing really well in terms of mixing, right? But everything is variation. In the end, probably we taken our decision in our models in 0.00 something, and actually there is a lot of variation in the system.
So we formulate with a micrometer, and the feed mill marks it with a chalk, and then they cut it with an axe at the farm. But the other thing is that formulating, and you know, it's like driving, and you can't look out your windshield. You can only look in your rear view mirror, and you're driving because all your analysis is from the past. And so what Aaron and Weasley are describing is shortening up that time. So you can never really look ahead, but if you could look not so far behind.
Joining us on The Squeal today were Dr. Aaron Gaines, along with Dr. Weasley Orlando and Wayne Past, discussing significant nutritional considerations for diet formulation. You're welcome to share this PIC podcast widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.